morning. Good morning. I'd like to call this Committee on Veteran Affairs to order. Today is Thursday, February the 10th, 2005. First this morning, I'd like to recognize any and all veterans. And if you'd stand, please, or raise your hand, we'd like to recognize
you.
We just want you to know how much we appreciate you and realize what you risked for us. Thank you so much. Today we'll be having an informational meeting, and I'm pleased to announce I've already collected $4 from our individuals who will be testifying today, so that's good news. And for the record, I'd like to show this $10 bill. Because I am now current Representative Boquist on all acronyms I have used to date. I guess it'll be a monthly payment plan for me. Okay, we're all paid up. I'd like to welcome Scott Seeley and Joe Nortz today from Tri-West Healthcare Alliance, and we appreciate very much your being here, and we look forward to learning more about Tri-West and your alliance. So if you would please identify yourself and let's go.
Madam Chairman, I am Scott Seeley, Vice President of External Affairs for Tri-West Healthcare Alliance.
Madam Chair, I am Joe Nortz. I'm the Director of Guard and Reserve Liaison for Tri-West Healthcare Alliance.
Great.
And it's a privilege for us to be here today. We appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. On a personal note, it's a unique opportunity for me because my whole career in this business began around the corner as an intern here 25 years ago, and gone to Washington, D.C. and back, and it's great to be back, and things haven't changed that much as far as the facility is concerned. But the members change and the facility stays the same. So, but it is a privilege for us to be here. We come on behalf of our co-workers, nearly half of whom are either retired military or dependents, and bring a commitment to this program, the TRICARE program, that is in the fiber of our company and the personnel that we have, and it is a mission that we have, a privilege and an obligation to help serve the families primarily, but also those in active duty, their families, retirees and their families, and provide them access to health care throughout the Western United States. I will go through our presentation here talking a bit more about that detail, and along the way here, we'll also get specifically into the Guard and Reserve benefit and how that has been evolving with changes in Washington to that program over the last several years. We are a component of the military health system under the Health Affairs Department in the Department of Defense, and report through our chain, through San Diego, where our regional director sits, to the Undersecretary for Assistant Secretary for Health Affairs, Dr. Winkenwerder, in Washington, D.C. The system on a whole, in a collaborative and cooperative way, has the responsibility to provide care for the veteran community, as I mentioned, active duty service members and their families, retirees and their family members. And it is a growing and I know a significant issue, especially in Oregon now, as Guard and Reserve members come into that mix. We did note in the paper this morning, along with the other news of your muster yesterday, that there was a Silver Star bestowed upon Sergeant Sedgwick from Oregon, a guardsman, and they are an intimate part of the force, and if they perceptually were not in the past, they certainly are now, and every American understands that. And so making sure that they get the care equal to that of all other members of the service is a priority for us today.
Excuse me just a moment, Mr. Seeley. Can you hear him at the back? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Just by way of the structure of the system, over the last year and a half, the Department of Defense moved to a more streamlined system from their perspective, where the country, which at one point was divided into 12 different regions with different contractors providing different care and sometimes with different sets of rules in each of those 12 areas, was consolidated into just three regions. Purpose of not going to a whole countrywide system is that it is in the taxpayers' interest to have competition, to have competing contractors who work both work with each other to deliver the care, but also make sure that they are don't have a monopoly on it and lose the benefits the taxpayers get from having a competitive system. But the three regions now have allowed us to work with our two counterparts to reduce the complications with the transfers that occur within the military system. It allows us to more easily move people back and forth and not have as much difficulty when they're moving from station to station. Accordingly, then, within the TRICARE program, which is the umbrella that covers the country as well as healthcare overseas, TriWest has the Western United States, and that is essentially from the Mississippi to Alaska and Hawaii. More than 50% of the geographic area of the United States, and we have the privilege to serve what we think are some of the most wonderful places in the country. They, in some cases, are the most spread out, and it's a challenging situation. Now, especially as guard units are being called up in small communities from Pasco to El Paso, finding those people, making sure that we have the care available for them is vitally important. And we are encouraged by the interest the committee has taken, and we look forward to your advice and insights for us about how we can better find the people that need care throughout this the region as a whole, but specifically Oregon, which has all of the same elements that that the region as a whole has in terms of urban areas and far-flung rural areas as well. The components of care that are provided within the military treatment facilities, or MTFs, incidentally, TRICARE, while it is capitalized throughout the military system, is not an acronym. So it's not good.
Oh, darn.
It's not good for
that's money for our veteran trust fund.
But MTFs we use routinely, and they are the primary source of care. The military treatment facility is the location that the system was built up around. Those are healthcare facilities within military bases, and it is, again, Oregon is unique in that there is not a base infrastructure here. Therefore, care is delivered in a marginally different way in Oregon to military personnel because there is no core location where they can work in and out of. But the care elements of care are access to physicians, access to care. We process claims on behalf of the Defense Department, medical management and coordination of care, customer service, which is a key focal point for us. One of the biggest benefits we believe as a private sector entity in terms of core competency that we bring to this program, and spoke a little earlier with Representative Boquist about this. Customer service is a very important thing. It is not always at the highest priority within governmental systems, and we try and help populate this system with a high level of customer service and attention to the people that we serve. And then behavioral health. Behavioral health is a growing concern, I think, across the board, the veteran community, certainly among now the active duty community, as we're bringing guard units home and then deactivating them, what sort of continuum of care that is available to them. We are working through this new contract within the last year to try and integrate the medical side and the behavioral health side so that we are, as everyone knows, as the science of medicine gets more and more refined, that there are connections between the health and well-being of individuals and their mental health. And the military has observed that and is working with us to try and be more responsive to those needs behalf of our military families and the stresses as well in the campaign that's underway now on families are extraordinary. And so we have a behavioral health component as a growing part of the care that we provide. There are a series of options within the TRICARE program. This starts to get into some of the complex detail that acronyms start flowing many to a sentence, actually.
Good.
I will just note for you that there are a variety of options. We can go into more detail as members would like in terms of how that is done. And the bottom line is that it is our job to retain a network of providers to support the military system and fill in where there are any gaps in that system or provide specialties to support the military capability on the healthcare side.
Mr. Seeley,
yes.
Could you please tell me, is TriWest a parent company of three TRICARES?
Actually, Madam Chairman, those are three different health care products that exist within the TRICARE program. So anywhere in the country that you go, you have the option of, it's not the case, depending on what your locality is, but you may have an option to choose one of these three. So there's a three-option choice in the East, in the South, and in the West.
Okay, if you could go back one more slide, please. Is that one more? Oh, the map, then, I guess. One more, please.
Okay.
So I'm looking at these, TRICARE West, South, and North. Are those separate companies?
Yes. Sorry, they... Exactly.
Is TriWest composed of only three companies? Is TriWest the parent company?
No. The parent of this entire system is actually TRICARE. The Defense Department operates TRICARE. It oversees the entire structure of military health care.
So TRICARE is a wholly owned subsidiary of our government. Of the DOD?
Effectively, yes.
Basically.
It's not a company per se. It is a department of
like
the federal
post
government.
Post office. Okay.
To some extent, although we think they are more effective sometimes in the post office.
I'm sure. But then does TRICARE under DOD, to whom it answers, right?
Yes.
Does it hire then or contract with private companies to provide these services?
Yes, it does.
So really, when you talk about TRICARE West, who are you really talking about?
We, and our name, which was created, the purpose of our company, we exist for the purpose of delivering this business. Therefore, our name was designed to be very much aligned with the program that we serve and we are contracted with. But we, TriWest, are the private sector contractor that delivers this care for the government.
Good. And so, maybe if you're going to get to this, forget this question. But if not, could you tell us who this is? I want to know who is TriWest.
Okay. Yes. We are moving in that direction.
Okay.
Yes. It was our desire to give a sense of the broad overview of how the program works as it comes from the Defense Department and then get to the specifics of us and how we do the work in the West.
Okay. And then since we have 50% of the territory, do we have one-third of all veterans and current military in this TRICARE West?
There are roughly 9 million people in the TRICARE program worldwide, and 2.8 million of them are in the West. So essentially, there are three roughly co-equal groups.
Thank you.
So having described, and I hope clearly, or if, I appreciate your questions to help clarify some of the detail here, Madam Chairman, but then as I've described, the overall TRICARE program, what the federal government has committed in terms of delivering health care, then we, TriWest, were created in 1996 for the purpose of bidding on this contract and providing this care. And we were successful nearly 10 years ago in initially getting into this business, and for a 8-year period served 16 western states. In August of 2003, the latest version of that, more streamlined three-region contract came out. We were successful in winning the western region, and then began last year serving the western United States, adding to our region Oregon, Washington, California, Alaska, and Hawaii.
And Mr. Seeley, where are you, I guess is a better way to say it, where are you in, is it another eight-year contract?
Actually, the initial award was a five-year contract from initiating operations in 2004 through 2009.
And now it is a... Or previously, what...
We are in that new contract now.
Okay, so you're in your second year of the new contract.
Yes, we started operations in Oregon on June 1st of 2004. We're 7 months in at this point. And as you described earlier, the size of the region, our slide is actually represents or mentions 2.7 million. It's an indication of the pace of the activations and the call-ups that number has risen now to 2.8 here as the ops tempo picks up for the military.
Great picture that was.
Thank you. We enjoy it very much. We use it a lot. It kind of captures who we serve. Thank you. The model that TriWest uses to serve in this capacity is unique. It isn't done this way in any other region. It was not done previously at all. We work off of a platform of Blue Cross Blue Shield systems throughout the West, and they are the folks that we work with to contract for local networks of providers, and in Oregon, Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield is our partner in lining up the doctors that we need to serve the population. And as those needs expand, specialties are needed, we work through them and their relationships locally to help get the doctors that we need. It also is a model that, unlike the other two areas of the country where a corporate headquarters derives all the income from the government and it comes back to that one place. The way our implementation of the contract works, some proceeds from the DOD contract get spread across the entire region. So from our perspective, whereas there are taxpayers contributing into this program from every state, there's economic benefit that comes back to each state as well through our business model. And I will turn it over to my colleague to walk through briefly the state of play now as far as the Guard benefit.
Madam Chair, I too want to thank you and the committee for having us here this morning. It really is a wonderful opportunity. My position, Director of Guard and Reserve Liaison, is a new position. TriWest recognized the dramatically changing role that Guard and Reserve members play both on the warfront as well as recognizing the changing nature of the health care benefits that are being offered to those heroes that we have over there fighting for us. What this represents is the continuum that the Department of Defense and Congress is laying out for those members. The idea is that in order for us to have a viable force for Guard and Reserve, from the Guard and Reserve, we need to make sure that they are healthy enough to take on the task of fighting wars. And so what they are looking at is trying to create a system where that health benefit allows them to look after themselves throughout the period of time that they may be a member. And it starts with what is now called delayed effective date orders, and what you see up here is pre-activation. What this does is a member, once they get these delayed effective date orders, up to 90 days prior to actual mobilization, they are now eligible to go and take advantage of one of the options that was laid out before: TRICARE Prime, TRICARE Extra, TRICARE Standard. And it's not only them, it's also their families. Congress has recognized the fact that if we're going to have our warfighters concentrating on their jobs, they can't be worried about the health care and their families. And so this is also available to them. This is a new benefit. It has really only been effective for the last couple of months. It really, in January is when people could start taking advantage of this, though under some circumstances people could take advantage of it. Before that, it was only through going and getting their health care and then saving the receipts and then turning those receipts in. But this particular benefit is to try and make sure that the people are taking advantage of this benefit so that prior to mobilization they can take care of those health issues that that could keep them from being mobilized. In the active duty segment of the benefit, this is where it is absolutely true that the global war on terrorism has taken these folks who in the past have not been necessarily fully implemented with regular services. Now they are totally implemented with those services, and they have all of the health care benefits that the regular service members have, as do their families, for the entire period that they've been activated. When I added on that fact, as do their families, that's not always been the case, but it is now. The next segment there, TAMP, Transitional Assistance Management Program. This has been a benefit that Guard and Reserve members have had access to on a limited basis. That basis has now been expanded. It used to be 60 days or 120 days, depending upon how long they had been activated. Now, if you are activated for over 30 days on Title 10, Department of Defense orders, you have a full 180 days of TRICARE benefit available to you, as do your family members. There are some restrictions as far as remote areas, and we may get into that because there are a number of remote areas here in Oregon, but for 6 months, they have access to that care. The next block, TRICARE Reserve Select, has to do with a new benefit, which will be coming out by law, at least by the 26th of April, that allows those members that have served on orders that are in support of contingency operations that they can purchase extended care. For every 90 days that these people have been on those orders, they can purchase a year's worth of TRICARE benefit through premiums. And there is a string attached with that they remain in the selective reserve during that period of time. So this is a retention tool along with the benefit that it allows them. And in so doing, they can purchase that care for themselves and for their families. The last component, Continued Health Care Benefits Program, that is truly a health care indemnity program that has been available for a number of years. It is strictly premiums. The question of the size of the premiums compared to the Continued Health Care Benefit and the TRICARE Reserve Select is in question. We don't know what those premiums are going to be. We would like to believe that they're going to be significantly less than what the Continued Health Care Benefits programs are. But there is no doubt that Congress has recognized the vital role that reserve component members have played in the global war on terrorism, and this is one way in which they are showing that appreciation of what it is our folks in the reserve component are doing. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, just 1 minute. Could you tell me, once again, what does TAMP stand for?
Transitional Assistance Management Program.
Transitional Assistance
Management Program.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe I should take this opportunity to explain what materials have been placed in front of you, just to give you an idea that you will have a reference to everything we've talked about. It is in these materials. If you go to the larger of the brochures, the first one is the TRICARE Beneficiary Handbook. Now, this booklet really is put out for all of the eligible members that can participate in TRICARE. So that means active duty in their families, retired in their families, Guard and Reserve as we've just laid out. So this is fairly complex in the fact that each one of those, by law, have different benefits. And that's why it sometimes gets a little bit detailed. But all the basic information about the TRICARE program is in this booklet. The second booklet, which talks about TRICARE choices, gets into greater detail about the options that are available to the various beneficiaries. There are also two little brochures that I've placed at your desk, and one is TRICARE Transitional Healthcare Benefits, and this deals with TAMP, Transitional Assistance Management Program. And it talks about the different elements of how you take advantage of that benefit. And the last is TRICARE Choices for the Reserve Component. This is Department of Defense attempt to keep up with these changing benefits. And these will continue to come out as those benefits change. There is a website which is probably the most comprehensive and the most up-to-date resource for finding out exactly what the health care benefits are. And all of the websites that you would ever want to find out about this, these benefits are in these brochures.
Now, was it Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at this chart you have right here, where you've got various levels of extended coverage beyond their service, depending on which box you're looking at, how do you make recommendations to folks who hopefully are coming back from their service, either returning to a job or coming into a new job? Hopefully those jobs have some level of health coverage. Do you advise people to go ahead and if they have to have some kind of a cost payment, go ahead and get a plan through their employer back home and carry that alongside the TRICARE plan? Do you recommend that they save their money and just have the TRICARE plan? What, how do you deal with that as they're returning?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, that's a very complex issue, of course. To say that we would make those kinds of recommendations is we would tend to stay away from that because every individual member's situation is so different from the next person's. We really like to ensure that they're educated as far as what the benefit does and does not do, such that they can make that choice. They do have within their units beneficiary counseling and assistance coordinators. And that's where you can get into the detail of what's the situation and what are the options based upon that situation. And they are integral to various units so that hopefully they're going to get that kind of advice. But TriWest does not want to get into providing that advice because it is very, very complex, and we certainly don't want to steer somebody in the wrong direction.
Can I follow up on that, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
If they do, either with advice from others or not, decide to have two sets of coverage. If they have a coverage through their employer, does that in any way limit the amount of coverage they have available from TRICARE? I mean, do you provide the first payment and then the other can just be supplementary?
Madam Chair and Representative Hunt, we are a second payer to other health insurance. What happens is they will, if in fact they have other health insurance, they will get an explanation of their benefits by their insurance company. They would then forward the bill and the explanation of benefits to TriWest or one of the other contractors, and then TRICARE would pay those benefits which are appropriate for which they're eligible.
Madam Chair.
Representative Boquist.
I just came ahead and looked at some of the other sheets, and they may be answering this question, but I think at some point in their presentation, Madam Chair, it would be helpful for us to pick a place like Burns, which has a unit deployed, and have them walk through each one of these steps of how this would work, because this is actually a very critical component of the concern of this committee.
Absolutely.
And I don't know whether it's now or whether they want to go back to the slide at a later point, but so we would get an example of how this actually would work soldier to soldier from each step to each step. So
I'd recommend that we finish our presentation.
Okay. We will go through different scenarios. You actually raised a point which we would like to get to and potentially solicit the committee's support about how we find those units, identify them, and get resources to them. So,
could I just ask how many members have you assisted from Oregon in this program?
We'd have to take a look at the enrollment
numbers. Yeah. We know
just
how many.
Is it increasing or decreasing, or what's been the history?
Yes. Well, the eligible number, there are a couple issues here. One, having just begun in June of 2004, we don't have a great deal of history in order to compare with. It's possible to go back to the prior contractor and could get some sense from them. I'm quite confident, though, that with the activations that are going on and the number of people that are now in the field from Oregon, this is the highest level of usage of the TRICARE program since it came into existence in Oregon.
I'm also wondering how do you communicate with 370,000 possible clients?
If I may, I'll just continue through. We'll get to the number, actually, I think, in a couple of slides, of how many people we have eligible for the program here in the state, and then talk about how we go about reaching out to them. Just to reaffirm, we do talk in large numbers, and it's a legislative tendency, I know, also to talk in quantities of dollars and programs and so forth, but it is constantly brought home to us and with our counterparts at the military treatment facilities that we are talking about individuals and their health care and their families in these cases. And from the perspective of our company, and I think obviously by the creation of this committee, an understanding that this is a group of people that are very special to all of us and need to be treated in that fashion. And so we do tend to use numbers, and we use large quantities of different things in a 21-state region, but we are fully aware that it is every individual considers their own care to be the most important thing for them, and we're appreciative of that and respond to that. To get to your numbers questions, as far as Oregon is concerned, we have a growing number of providers available to provide care. It's approaching 6,000 now, and the number of eligible beneficiaries for TRICARE is nearly 50,000. Define that population a little bit better. It would be the activated Guard and Reserve members, their families, and retired military and their families. And so I think your 370,000 figure was the entire
number of
veteran
in the
population.
State.
Correct.
They don't have access to this program.
Correct. Those veterans who are eligible for TRICARE are those who served 20 years and retired. If they have retired with that extended service, it's the commitment of the nation that they remain eligible for the TRICARE program. If they have served any length of time, as limited as it might be, they are eligible and provide or receive care from the Veterans Administration.
So would we be able to get that breakdown of this 50,000?
In terms of how many are Guard, I think
20-year retired, and how many are current Guard?
Yeah, it's going to be
reserves.
Hugely a retiree number, a substantial portion of it. I think the current Guard number is 1875.
Well, the currently mobilized number of reserve component members from Oregon as of last Wednesday was 1,875, according to DOD figures. So, again, there are a number that have been demobilized, and they may indeed be going through their transition period of health care. So that it's going to be a number something larger than that that are currently eligible, them and their families. So it'll, with, again, 1,800-plus folks mobilized, that number is probably going to be on the order of 1.4 factor based upon family size that obviously the folks calculate in terms of looking at how many folks there are out there?
Ballpark, you know, maybe the top number might be 5,000 in that category. So you look at 40 plus thousand of military retirees then are among that eligible population.
Okay. What I'm just trying to find out, because we do have an issue that we'll discuss with you in a little bit, is how many of these are 20-year veterans retired?
We could do some extrapolation off that number, just, you know, back of a napkin sort of thing. If we're talking retirees and their family members, and we're talking potentially about 40-some thousand, I would guess somewhere in the 18,000 to 19,000 range would be the actual retired personnel. The remaining portion of that 40,000 would be their family members. And you're following the math here, which is we're doing all those estimations right here.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question regarding the 1,875 mobilized. Was that just guardsmen, or did that include all reservists?
That is all reserve component members, which includes the Guard.
Okay. Do you happen to have a figure for specifically the National Guard?
Unfortunately, Department of Defense, who supplies these numbers, do not break it down that way. They combine them.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question on the military retirees, and it's not just specifically for Oregon. If a person, probably mostly, usually a man, a majority man situation, if he dies or she dies, whatever, and the spouse survives, they retain the TRICARE benefits, do they not, if they're part of the retiree indefinitely?
That is correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bulkley.
Could you define, just so I understand in my mind, the retirees? You're talking about retired active duty Title 10 retirees. Are you talking about active guard reserve Title 32 retirees? And the third category, are the 20-year traditional reservist retirees in that category? I think the traditional retirees are not in that category, but could you correct me?
We're talking about Mr. Seeley's 14,000 he just talked about of the 50, of the 48,959 here.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, to just make sure I understand what you're saying, when Guard and Reservists serve their 20 years, they could still be fairly young individuals at that point. They have to wait until they're 60 years old before their retirement pay kicks in, and that's also when their TRICARE benefit would kick in as well. For them and their families. Does that answer the question?
Okay, I just then need to work on my head. Who do all these others, separate from this 14,000, who do these other 350,000 veterans and their spouses get coverage from?
The Veterans Administration, VA, the VA system, and... I'll yield, Representative. Is that a question, or you want to help with the answer?
Cents.
Oh,
okay.
We prepaid.
Did I say it?
We prepaid. VA, Veterans Administration.
Okay, so what we're hearing today, and I think we were under, or I was certainly under wrong concept. You only, no? This, okay, Brian, help me, please.
Okay, Madam Chair, the Veterans Administration... TRICARE was established not by these gentlemen, by the federal government and the Congress, and it covers the active duty personnel, presently active duty. It covers the mobilized reserve component soldiers and their families, and it covers those individuals that retired with 20 years of service or more. And that's either active duty service, or if you are a reserve component, the way the law is structured, and we actually have a bill in front of us that addresses this, is that if you retire after 20 years in the reserve component, like Social Security, you have to wait to a certain age before that retirement actually kicks in. And generally the number used is 60 years old. There's a couple of us that fall into the 62-year-old category. That is what TRICARE covers only. It's the mobilized soldiers, for our purposes here, the mobilized soldiers and their families. Before, during, and for a short period afterwards, they are covered by TRICARE under this federal government program. the bulk of the 300 some odd thousand veterans we have fall purely into the Veterans Administration category.
Thank you.
Okay.
And getting much smarter.
That's one. We do again value the opportunity to walk through this a little bit because it is a very complicated system. We'll wind up here very quickly, but if all of us with the experiences that we've had and the places that we've been have difficulty with this, imagine that you're a 19-year-old spouse. Your husband has departed to go to Iraq, and you may have one or two children at home, and one of them is sick, and you need to figure out how to get to a doctor. That's the situation that we believe we're here for, and that's the challenge that we try and address every day. And getting them the information they need so that when that child is sick, they figure out how to get that child to the doctor, and it is covered because they have earned that coverage by the federal government, it's a challenging situation right now, and we welcome your participation with us in helping get the word out to those people so they know where to go when they need help. And this is just an example of why this can be a challenging thing for those people that we are all interested in.
Okay, Mr. Seeley, does the DOD determine X number of dollars per soldier? To get your contract, what did they base it on?
That gets even more complicated. But yes, the bottom line is that it is a delivery-based contract. They estimated that a certain number of military personnel and families were going to need to get care over a certain period of time, and we bid on how much we would deliver that care at per person. And I'm not familiar with the numbers.
Could you find out those numbers and let us know?
Sure. There end up being a number of additional factors that work into that, which is what is the average growth and the cost of health care across the economy in a given year.
You just give us that information footnoted with those.
Okay.
We appreciate it. Thank you. And I guess what I perceive is this a self... does the DOD prescribe what type of health coverage these individuals get? For example, dental is a big issue with those going to war. Does the DOD say, you bid on this package and it's only going to provide this service? Or are there options for these people?
Madam Chairman, yes. The benefit package is determined by the Defense Department. And if there are issues where there may be a discrepancy over whether something is eligible for care or not, we are the first line, and we have doctors evaluating other doctors' interpretations in terms of whether it's an eligible service or not. If the beneficiary feels something's denied inappropriately, they can appeal, and it is reviewed by another panel of doctors. Ultimately, we are not the people that decide. If the beneficiary determines that they believe they deserve the care and they believe that it's covered, they ultimately can go to the Defense Department and have a decision made there. And we have a routine process we go through every day with people around those things. But the underlying benefit package is one defined by the Defense Department and is applied consistently across the system.
Thank you.
And I did earlier just mention that how... what we believe is a unique approach to this in terms of the local involvement in the local relationships with doctors and the local benefit to the economy as well for us in Oregon. The Regents Blue Shield or Blue Cross Blue Shield plan has been our partner and helped us line up those nearly 6,000 doctors that are signed up to provide this care. And I mentioned earlier, although it is probably not possible for me to convey as enthusiastically as our CEO would do or as one would see the enthusiasm of our organization around this opportunity that we have to provide care to these individuals. Our CEO actually had a great interest in attempting to be here today, but had a conflict in that he had an invitation from the USS Reagan crew to go out and participate in some of their shakedown operations off the coast of California. So he's on board an aircraft carrier today talking to folks on the front lines about how they how they're doing what they do and what their needs are. I wanted to conclude To emphasize that point from TriWest's perspective, we are involved in this business. We were created for this business. We are committed enthusiastically to providing quality care to the military family. But it is also our commitment to care for and support these families, both active duty and retirees, beyond the scope of our contract and beyond health care. And as such, we have partnered with the USO, have helped them, or helping them with the construction of new facilities where there is need around the world. Fisher Houses, there is not one in Oregon. They have two of them now in Washington State, but it's the Ronald McDonald equivalent for the military. And these houses are built adjacent to military facilities so that when families are coming to care for their loved ones in a military hospital, they can do so without expending a great deal of money to be near their family. We are helping build one of those up at Fort Lewis, alongside Madigan Army Medical Center, and then a series of other support and relief organizations. We are substantial contributors to, believe that's part of our mission, and would also welcome the committee's counsel and advice about whether there might be opportunities here in Oregon to provide that kind of family support, and make us aware of those as well, because we would be eager to be supportive of these families in ways besides delivering quality care.
Great.
And I will conclude with that, and we welcome getting into more of the detail of your questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate both of you being here today. Questions from the committee? Representing Bolton.
Madam Chair, I'd like to go back to the bar box chart that explain this and potentially get them to walk through.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just take Burns, Oregon, because it's probably the worst case we have. But go forward right there. Where we have a deployed unit from Burns, Oregon, and I guess I'm trying to think, because you're from Arizona. It kind of like, I guess, I can't even think of a place, but it would be Burns, Oregon is out in north, or is in definitely central eastern Oregon. It is maybe 3,000 or 4,000 in population. It has a cavalry troop that is now somewhere in northern Iraq, I think from there. And that's a prime example where you have 100 soldiers that are deployed in a city that is 5 hours drive from Portland. And, you know, I think 5 hours drive from here. And can you run through just a hypothetical? I know this did not happen because they were deployed before this, but could you run through each of these blocks of how a rural Oregon city and its 100 troops would be impacted, and how much it would cost, and where would they go, and what would be the steps to get one of those soldiers in this program and cover his family and come out the other end?
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, I'll let Joe get into the detail of that, but in terms of our awareness of the situation out there, I am a graduate of Canby High School.
All right.
I went to Jennings Lodge Grade School, and on a high school trip, had what they thought was appendicitis over in the hot springs, and took a long, bumpy ambulance ride to Madras. So I am aware of what those circumstances may be like. I thought I was going to die from the ambulance ride before I got to the hospital. So
you understand our problem.
Yes, indeed, we do.
I think based upon his history, Madam Chair and Representative Boquist, first of all, if we're talking about the family member, is that correct? Because once the member goes active duty, I mean, he has access to the military treatment facilities, and he will be looked after very well.
Madam Chair, though, but if I'm reading that block chart up there, it says pre-activation up to 90 days before activated, and that's just, I think, comes back to the dental issue you were reaching at and getting the soldier ready to go. And what I'd really like to do is say, okay, the order comes down 90 days before, and God knows it never does, but it doesn't work that way. But in your ideal order, 90 days before, what is covered for these people out there, and then once they're on active duty, and then TAMP and TRICARE Select and HC. Just give us a hypothetical example. We know it's not going to be accurate because it's in the past, but to give us a feel for how this works.
Yes, you certainly are.
What first has to happen in a situation like that is indeed the issuance of the orders. And yes, I have talked to numbers of staffs of guard units throughout a number of the states, and they never see those orders 90 days ahead of mobilization. That is a Department of Defense element that we are not going to control, but we certainly do like to bring that to the attention of our counterparts in Department of Defense, that this is where it's got to start. What happens then is that they get coded in a defense enrollment eligibility reporting system, DEERS. I paid for that one, Madam Chair, already. And once that's done, that system is a fairly universal system. And if, in fact, this member from Bern got those orders in hand and went to his doctor for treatment on, say, a knee that needed to be looked at, and there was an orthopedic surgeon that could look at it in that location, that would be taken care of. All of the expenses of that would go to TriWest, and that claim would be paid. If the doctor was within our network, if in fact he was one of our network doctors, the soldier wouldn't even file the claim, the doctor would. And so he would go get his care, and that would be the end of that.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Herbert, how would the soldier know that TriWest is going to cover him? Does he have to, and I'm going to pay for this too, ma'am, because I can't even pronounce it. Because under the DEERS program, which is this is probably the single most critical component here for the committee member. If you're not in this federal Department of Defense computer system, you're not covered, period, regardless of what they say. And in many cases, Veterans Affairs is the same thing. And there are problems with DOD with this. But how do they know, and I should remind you that even the reserve component is issued in many cases DEERS cards, their dependents are. This is like the ID card that says I'm eligible. But how would the soldier know that he's covered? Would he have to sign up for benefits? Would he have to have carried a TRICARE card to the doctor? And we're trying to get down to the nuts and bolts, because what we have in Oregon is we have soldiers that simply don't know. So when we talk about this before, and it's not your fault, I understand that. So we're trying to figure out how he actually does this, and then what mechanisms we at the state can implement to make sure that they get the information. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we recognize at TriWest, as do the other contractors, and the Department of Defense, and our counterparts in government, which is really the TRICARE regional office, that education is absolutely key. And we are challenged with getting to Bern to provide that kind of education, and we're seeing it now. Now, it is very likely, as much as I hate to admit, that the first time that soldier is going to hear about these benefits is at a mobilization briefing, and that, unfortunately, is not going to be in Bern. It's probably going to be someplace like Fort Lewis. And again, that is part of the challenge that we will have in educating them that these benefits are available. Through the TRICARE regional office, which is our government counterparts, there are initiatives in which we are attempting to get that information to them when, in fact, it's indicated in DEERS that they are indeed eligible. But have we solved that problem? No. Are we working that issue? Yes. The question is, and as Scott has mentioned, we would certainly like some suggestions from the committee as to how to get that word out so that these people know about it. Some are very well educated on these benefits because all these benefits, are available on the web, and some are very good at getting regardless of where they are in the state. But you're right. Education is an issue that we have yet to solve to 100%, but one that we are working on.
Is the pre-activation coverage for families, too?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And what does this include? Does it include dental?
The dental program in TRICARE is a carve-out. It is an element that TriWest does not deal directly with. They have to enroll in a TRICARE dental program to get dental care.
And that's not paid for. They have to pay it themselves?
There are typically deductibles, but most of it does get covered, yes. But again, it's education, it's enrollment, it's knowledge that those things are available to them that that we are certainly looking for ideas as to how to accomplish.
So for our 3670th that left yesterday, let's say they had previous to yesterday, or I'm not sure that was their date, current date, but of demo. But can they keep their medical certificate or medical receipts from the previous 90 days and send them to you to be turned in, since they may not have known this program was effective as of January?
It all depends on when they became eligible in the DEERS system. They should have been coded that they are eligible for this delayed effective date orders in that system. And if, in fact, they are there, they indeed could turn in those receipts since that time.
Correct.
And they would be covered.
So would it be possible, would y'all run a TV ad that says, we appreciate our troops? Chances are you may not have known this program was in effect. Contact our office at XYZ for previous 90-day coverage of you and your family of medical costs. My worry is if they had to sign up for dental, they're certainly not going to already have it. And that is one of the most critical issues in going to war. They get over to Iraq or Afghanistan or some other foreign place, or Africa, heaven forbid, with these terrible dental problems that I don't even know how they function. So I'm concerned what we can do about that. I mean, those that left yesterday may not have known, they could have had dental coverage, and since we don't do anything for our guard, I cannot even believe we don't provide health insurance for them. I'm in shock about that. I can't believe that we'd let them go without knowing that they could have dental work done. Or even visual, which is critical. Is visual covered?
Madam Chairman.
Or is that also a supplement?
There is a limited eye care benefit within the health care package.
Yeah. Does it come as part of the package, or is that one more you have to sign up for?
That's within the health care benefit.
And is there mental parity in this health benefit?
Mental?
Uh-huh, for mental health coverage.
Yeah, there is also a behavioral health component within the DOD approved package, yes.
So when this package ends, if they were on it getting to the war site, and they come back, then I don't want them to have to go under a new plan that says, uh-oh, you've got this pre-existing, illness, so you don't qualify. Are they impugned from that?
To go back into a commercial plan, that is an issue right now.
It is?
It is. As a result, as we've been seeking to describe it to you, and I'll try and put it in more simple terms without all the acronyms, but it was the case historically that if you were on active duty as a Guard or Reserve member, you got health care because you were on active duty, and when you left it, you lost your care. The determination was made 2 years ago that we were relying more heavily on reserve units and the Guard, and we needed to provide a more robust health care benefit, and there was this temporary program established in 2003. We are part of a big Defense Department bureaucracy that doesn't take its time necessarily, but it does take time in order to develop these programs and put them in place. So the effort began to get that temporary benefit put into place, which provided the 180 days of additional coverage after Guard or Reservists were demobilized. Then the determination by Congress was that there needed to be a more robust benefit than that. And so last year, actually December, President finally signed into law a bill which included an expanded and permanent benefit that it doesn't provide permanent coverage for Guard and reservists, but it is a benefit that will not be described as temporary anymore, and it captures time before and after these points of service. Congress is now debating additional provisions that they would implement probably this year to enhance that further. In that continuum, we have the communications assignment of letting people know where they are today. This permanent benefit has not been instituted yet. It's scheduled to come in to take effect in April, and we are waiting for our orders to implement that. All this really does come back again, as Joe mentioned earlier, that the communications around this is vitally important. And as the question was asked earlier about how do we advise members what benefit they ought to take and what's the best way to get the coverage that they need. We need to know where these units are, and we need to send our folks out there to sit down and talk with them about what the state of play is today and make sure that they're signed up and eligible for that. And we want to widely communicate that there is a new benefit coming, and in the case you identified, if they are getting care that Congress might make retroactively covered, they should hang on to those receipts.
What do you mean that may? I thought they already had.
You made a point a minute ago that they ought to be covered all the time by this program.
But I'm talking about this plan right here, this up to 90 days, if some didn't know about it.
Right.
So they are retroactively covered for 90 days once they hear about this program, right?
If they have the orders.
Yes.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, if the Department of Defense, the Guard, the Army Reserve, the Marine Corps Reserve, and everyone else actually had them enrolled in DEERS.
And that is not a routine happening.
Madam Chair, that is a regulatory requirement that is routinely at the bottom of the priority list. So therefore, I mean, I guess what I'm saying, Madam Chair, is they fix that upon mobilization at the mobilization station, which is not 90 days before, but in theory, it could be when the maintenance units that we were just talking about, Madam Chair, once they were mobilized, and they're on their way, I think they're going to Fort Lewis as their mobilization.
For two months.
When they arrive there, they would fix their DEERS enrollment. Now, the after they're activated. Now, the Oregon Army and Air National Guard have recognized this problem, and they have been very proactive in getting people into the DEERS program so that when the mobilization order arrives, and mind you, again, Madam Chair and committee members, that 90 days is when TriWest, the contractor, can cover them. If the mobilization order is anything that I've experienced, it will arrive somewhere between 21 and 28 days before you leave, which means that's the period you would be covered for. Then if your DEERS was accurate and enrolled in the computer system, you would be covered from there and forward. So there's many compounding factors outside of what they're raising. I can speak only from the Army Reserve system, because that's the system I'm in. Its access to DEERS and updates is not in shambles, but pretty close. And you don't get it fixed until you actually reach the mobilization station. So,
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought that for the record, if you could identify which one of these websites would be the best one for someone to go to find out if they would be eligible for benefits. There's several listed. There's one for DEERS, pardon the acronym. There's one for TRICARE for the reserve component, and then there's one for TriWest.
Madam Chair and Representative Farr, the TRICARE website is the most comprehensive, and there is links on that website that get you into the very minute details of what the system can and can't do. And that's www.tricare.osd.mil. And there's a number of links that are associated with that website that you can find out everything that the system has to offer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any of these programs that are co-pays?
Yes.
Which ones are co-pays?
depending upon the option that you take advantage of. And part of that is based upon where your location is. TRICARE Standard and TRICARE Extra involve deductibles and copays.
Could you tell us what those are?
I don't know if I've got the list.
We have the choice.
They are listed in the beneficiary handbook of what those are, as well as in the choices. And again, you have to be very careful about what beneficiary you're referring to, because it does change between active duty and retired.
Okay, let me just take a moment, if the committee would allow me to, please. Kind of another scenario as Brian just went through. Okay, on the TRICARE Prime, how have I qualified? Because I pay nothing for any, no copays. I don't pay, have to pay one dime.
Madam Chair,
so
if you're...
So how do I qualify for Prime?
To qualify for Prime, you do have to enroll, and you do have to be in a location where there are network providers that can provide you that care.
Okay, and how would I know this?
Through the educational process that we have in place in distributing these kinds of materials at the mobilization and demobilization sites would be the most likely way in which you'd find that out.
Okay, so TRICARE Prime is I am a member of the Guard, and I have been activated to go to Iraq. I was activated on January the 1st. Do I qualify for Prime?
In fact, by definition, once you're activated, you have to be considered Prime. By definition, as an activated...
Can you turn me down?
No.
Thank you. Can you turn my family down?
Depending upon where they live, they may not be eligible for Prime. If they are not in an area that has access to network providers, then they probably could not take advantage of the Prime benefits.
Could you tell us, or do you have a map of where these Prime providers are located in our state? We could look at and...
We do physical copy that we can show you.
Provide it to us.
We can, yes, we will do that.
And I'm assuming they can also be treated at the Veterans Hospital.
Not as a TRICARE beneficiary. If they are a retired military person, they could do that.
However, Madam Chair, let me state that all Veterans Hospitals. I mean, this is again. Change is afoot, but approximately 6 weeks ago, a letter has come down from the head of Veterans Affairs that all veterans hospitals would be considered TRICARE providers if there is space available.
Right.
So
yes.
They will
Which
treat
good
them
news
if
for us.
It is. It's good news
so that's
for
good
all
news.
Our members.
Okay, we're moving on. Okay. So, but my family, no pre-existing problems, anything preempts our being on this TRICARE Prime plan, as long as there is a Blue Cross Regents provider in my area.
Madam Chair, if I understand you correctly, you're saying, are there pre-existing conditions that could preempt you taking advantage of Prime care? And no.
Good. Okay. Now, on TRICARE Extra, is that for... my ability to select the provider?
Madam Chair, if you're
as a soldier?
That's correct. If in fact you were, if you're in Prime, you're going to be assigned a primary care manager. But if in fact you didn't want to take advantage of that primary care manager and you went to a different doctor for some specialty care, if that doctor was still a part of the network, then you would apply TRICARE Extra deductibles and copay.
Okay. And then the TRICARE Standard, I don't quite understand this word indemnity next to it.
Could Madam Chair, could you put that in context for us?
I don't know. On your chart, if you'll go back to this page where you have TRICARE Standard and next to it you have an indemnity, and I'm just trying to understand that.
It's more of a routine, Madam Chair. It's a regular insurance product, basically, which means you can go to any doctor who, actually any Medicare provider, is also a TRICARE provider, and get care, and it is insured with copays and deductibles. That realm of doctors is basically wherever a doctor is a Medicare provider, they also accept TRICARE, and you can go see them, and you put the money, you put out the money, and then you are reimbursed for that share that's covered by the government.
Madam Chair, it's to indicate that typical indemnity health insurance programs in a fee for service type of mode is what TRICARE standard represents.
And what is the deductible?
The deductible is the amount of money that would have to be paid towards your health benefits before TRICARE would pick up the remaining amount.
Okay, but I mean, here where it says many times, 15% of the negotiated rate after the deductible is met. In standard, it's 20%. Help me understand that. So what does that mean to a person?
Just if I could, Madam Chair, if a, let's say, a routine office visit, if a doctor were to charge $100 for that, that may be the rate they bill at. The TRICARE program says that for standard office visit, they will cover $80 for a standard office visit. Then the beneficiary would pick up the first 20%. I didn't do this right because it's 20% of 80. $16 then would be the beneficiary's deductible, and the remainder would be picked up by the TRICARE program.
So the only difference between the TRICARE Extra and the TRICARE Standard is under the civilian outpatient visit copayment, emergency services, and civilian outpatient behavioral health. Is that what you see?
Madam Chair, there are differences in the deductibles and the copays. The reason there are those differences is because when you're applying TRICARE standard, it's because you're going to a network doctor or a network facility. In standard, you would not be going to a network provider. You'd be going someone outside the network, and that's why the deductible and the copays are higher.
My concern on this is the behavioral health issue. So apparently it is not in the same cluster, I guess I could use, as other general health issues, because you pay more for it.
Madam Chair, that it is among those things that through the extra program that you would pay more outside of the program. Your prime beneficiary, the standard benefit package includes a behavioral health component. So if you're in the prime program, it's part of the free care that you receive. If you are going for outside services through the extra program to a specific provider that you really want to go see, as with the other specialties that are mentioned there would be additional payments related to that. But there's still a core behavioral health benefit that is covered in the same percentage as the others within the extra program.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes. Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, I want to go back to Burns.
Okay, back to Burns.
And
Madam Chair, we may need to go to Burns.
And I think the Burns example, if you go back one slide or wherever it is here, is again, I think this is going to be the crux of the problem, wherever the block is. And the reason being, if you look at this, look right here, if pre-activation, and I think you need to kind of go through the steps, because they started, what I understand they said is that you could go to, and I think what we don't understand at the committee level is we don't understand, does TriWest receive a copy of the mobilization orders? I would assume not. How does TriWest know, I'm going to outline this, how does TriWest know when somebody is going to be covered? how does the soldier know when they're going, supposed to know when they're going to be covered? And that scenario as we go forward, and who is who has that information? Because I think if we found out in other issues, almost all agencies, state, federal, local, city, county, third cousins, and distant relatives have all said that the county veteran service coordinator is the point of contact for their agency, and they never even spoken to this guy in their life. And so I'm beginning to see that, you know, once again, I think we may have a fairly strong benefits package in healthcare in some areas, but if they don't know about it,
that's right,
it doesn't work. And I have the distinct feeling that these gentlemen who represent TriWest, not TriCare, have been fed to the wolves here on some of these issues. So could we go back to Burns and stop at the beginning and say who does what, when, and where under an ideal situation so that we at the committee can understand how we can impact it, at least at the state level, to get that information out, so on and so forth.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, as I mentioned earlier, part of this is a developing situation that does involve a number of agencies, as you just pointed out as well. What we see developing, and we see developing up to and including the Oregon State Legislature creating a Committee on Veterans Affairs, is a multi-agency and multi-level of government focus on these folks now that they deserve. And as a result, we're bringing the right people to the table. We are talking amongst ourselves about what is available to them and how they get it. There was the earlier question about how would you advise them to select their benefits. We put that benefit forward. We work closely with the family support coordinators to make them aware of what that array of benefits is, and the family support coordinators then, with a better understanding as part of that unit of what the circumstances are for their individual soldier, sailor, or airman, or marine, walk them through what fits best for them in their situation. We have had some areas of challenge over the years. Post 9/11, we immediately got an assignment to, as the call-ups occurred, to begin providing coverage all over the western United States for in some cases twos and threes and fours of individuals that were called up, and developed a mechanism then for the government to convey to us where those people were, when they were, and almost on a one-on-one basis we were able to go around to them and walk them through what their benefits were at that level. We're now talking about hundreds, in some cases thousands, of call-ups at a time. The family members associated with those units may be spread across a 5 hours drive worth of, or more. There's also a tendency at times when an individual gets called up for their family to say, okay, we're going back home, and we'll meet you when you get demobilized, and we'll come back to where we were put down stakes. So we need to find those families where they are, even if they choose to go back to Kansas and be with their in-laws or however they go about that, because they're eligible for the coverage and we're covering them, and we need to get to them and provide them the care. As we are adding more and more people to this mix, we are developing a better synergy with the government. We actually were in Washington 2 weeks ago, where the entire TRICARE program came together and talked about these issues and about how we get better lists with the addresses where the family members actually are, so that even if the service member is mobilized at Fort Lewis, we know where the family is and we can get information to them directly, even if we're catching up. Because some of this stuff, you get a pre-mobilization, pre-activation orders, and then they, for budgetary reasons, they pull it and they reissue it 3 weeks later and say, tomorrow we want you at Fort Lewis. Those situations are happening. And so the dialogue is occurring around, A, these orders now are not just we want you here now. These orders also have a bearing on the health care benefit that people and their families are eligible for. So more thought needs to go in that, and that discussion is going on while we speak. We left that meeting with thousands of military healthcare officials, went over to the Pentagon and talked in more specific detail with some of their leadership about how they need to make some of those decisions at the top levels, with an understanding of its impact on the ground on families in Burns, Oregon, for example. So the answer to your question is we don't believe we've been thrown to the wolves. We believe we have an opportunity, and we want to make the resources available to work with other interested parties and agencies to start getting this information out better, to take your advice and direction to us about how we can do that. One of the very specific things, in an area where the state of Idaho had a significant call-up almost a year ago now, in response to that, the governor said, how are these people getting health care? He had many of the same questions we're getting today. And he wasn't confident that they knew the benefit that they had and called us in. They actually had a mini summit meeting with the Assistant Secretary of Defense and a host of other luminaries there, including us, and said, okay, how are we going to do this? How are we going to get the word to these 1,600 families and make sure there's enough doctors for them in the communities that they reside in, if it's in Lewiston or Pocatello or wherever they may be. And we've engaged with them in a very direct way on what I would say is potentially, or was potentially, a pilot project around how you focus in on an area with this kind of geographic distribution and come up with a plan to communicate it. Madam Chair, you earlier mentioned you go on TV and tell people they've got this benefit. To some extent, that is exactly what we did in Idaho. We worked with the Defense Department. They got a team that came out to Boise and then to Idaho Falls and then went up to Coeur d'Alene. And in each place, they did a media tour, effectively, held a briefing at each location for the families in that area. In Idaho Falls, we had 8 families came, but we were on all 3 TV stations in Idaho Falls. So all those people that had other things to do that day but might be eligible for the program saw that there is a program here, there are people committed to helping you, and here's how you reach them. And we had discovered a young lady in Idaho Falls who had 2 special needs children who had been out there without any help and nowhere to turn and didn't know who to contact. And those 2 kids are now in a special program that the Defense Department has for special needs children. She was staying with her in-laws. Nobody knew where she went. The material that was sent out went to her prior home, and she couldn't get the care she needed. We're willing to go out and do those things. We do have a team here, half of our crew in Oregon is basically here just to go out and conduct briefings. And I need to say, we have had a wonderful dialogue, great back and forth communication with Colonel Caldwell, the Oregon Military Department. He has been a very aggressive proponent of the people that he serves and serve under him. And we've got that dialogue going. We're working on it. It is the case, from my experience in the political arena, that when you get elected leaders that get on top of these things and start encouraging them to happen, you get more attention around them. You get more of the bureaucracy moving the way it needs to. But I would say in this case, it is the federal government that has this responsibility, the federal government that owns this program. And your ability to encourage that and the interest shown here for these folks, we know is shared with the delegation. We've had opportunities. Mentioned earlier, Senator Smith got engaged early on with contracting issues. Senator Wyden's office has been helpful here in helping us with our network in this area. And the congressional offices as well have been involved in one place or another, identifying specific doctors that we needed and bringing them in the network and getting specific briefings set up. But if it were the desire of this committee to identify 4 or 5 places where there are units where the attention has not been as great as it ought to be, we will send people there, we will set up an event, and we will, perhaps with the involvement of the local elected officials, share this information. And I will tell you candidly, we try to do the one-on-one mailing and other interaction with folks. There is a definite benefit to adding a media component to that so that the wider community is aware that as taxpayers, they're providing care for these people and that care is being delivered and it's available. I think it's a very important thing for the public at large to know that there's a program here that takes care of these individuals, because it is discouraging, and I know in the field the morale impact of hearing that there is and this is a specific case that we dealt with, a young lady who is trying to find an obstetrician so that she could deliver her baby with her husband over in Iraq, and she went to a couple places and they said that they couldn't help her. So she went to a television station, and the television station made a call to the Pentagon to see where they could get help, and the result was a story that said there was no help for this young lady. As soon as we saw the report, one of our folks called them. There were 9 obstetricians ready to help her deliver her baby, all of them in our program, all of them available to her. Communication is the key, and making sure that on a wide basis, if a young lady goes somewhere in the community and has a problem like that, somebody says, hey, I know there's a program there. I've heard about it. The government is taking care of these people whose service member has put on the cloth of the United States and has gone to serve all of us in defense of our freedom. We are here to take care of them, and the interest that you as a committee have taken in heightening the awareness of that is tremendously appreciated by us.
Do you would you have the list of those 60 and the 3670th? Irving Hunt spoke before that group last Saturday, happened to be there. Do you have that list and they've been notified?
I don't have them in hand. I have great confidence that we participated in a briefing for them around this benefit, but this would be a good test to go back and
take the
list that we got from the Defense Department of everybody in the West who's been called up in the last 60 days and make sure that those names are on there. Did you say a number? Is it 60?
60.
60 of them. Okay.
And would you report back to us?
You bet.
What I wonder is, here we have the Guard. Would they have furnished... They could have furnished y'all with their names as well as the DOD could have.
And we'll go directly to Colonel Caldwell, who has been on top of this. He knows where our folks are and has called them when he's got a group that he wants them to come talk to or needs to get a briefing about the program. But we don't mind doing it 2 or 3 times, given the complexity of the program, to walk them through what's available to them.
Thank you. Hey, are we through with Burns yet?
I will yield to the representative.
Okay, Representative
Hunt.
Then
I will go back to
Dr. Burns.
Back to Burns. As soon as you're done, get us out of Clackamas, would you?
Madam Chair, you asked earlier about mental health parity. I just wanted to clarify that, at least as I read the document, so correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, it looks to me like, although there is mental health coverage, that there's certainly not a parity plan. Just looking at hospitalization as one example, am I correct in reading this that there's unlimited services as medically necessary under the physical health care side, but as you move over to the mental health side, that there are very strict limits, like 30 days per fiscal year, regardless of what physicians gauge to be medically necessary? So there is, as I'm reading it, there is mental health coverage, but there are very strict limitations on it that are not at parity with the physical health coverage.
Do you agree?
Unfortunately, if I comment on that, I'm probably going to be somewhat wrong. Now, there is perhaps you're aware that there is a mental or a behavioral health summit for Oregon on the 18th of February taking place in Salem, where some of these issues will probably get discussed. In terms of the benefit itself, again, those are established, by Department of Defense and Congress. And I guess I would have some difficulty determining what you mean by parity. Is there a difference in price, perhaps? And again, that is indicative of the differences in costs that may be associated with that area.
Yeah, and just to clarify, the issue I don't think is the difference in cost. The issue is, if your physician says you need something in terms of physical care, this plan covers it. If your physician says you need something on the mental health side of the equation, this plan covers it up to a limited number of sessions or days per fiscal year, depending on the category. So that's when the chair and I talk about parity, we talk about parity.
That's right. Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not saying you're not doing what the Department of Defense requires you to do. I just wanted to make sure we're clear for the sake of the record.
The critical need that we know we face.
And Madam Chair, that is being recognized.
Same thing.
It's being recognized around the country, and there are a number of initiatives out there to try to address the fact that there may be or there will be behavioral health issues of our returning people from the combat areas.
And Madam Chair, just affirm, I think I mentioned earlier that there is an evolving effort underway in Congress around these issues, I think definitely the behavioral health side is one component of that. What we're seeing in terms of the impact on individuals coming back and the, I would say what some people would describe as an alarmingly high percentage of people who are having issues in this area, it's going to be one of the things on the front burner in terms of what they do additionally in Washington. So
it also, I understand, it relates to other veterans, you know, whether it's Korea or Vietnam or World War II. I mean, you know, there seemed to have been this period of time that we've possibly not seen, you know, the burden. But as events are recalled, we see an increasing need by those veterans to have mental health treatment. So we're concerned about it. Is it possible to get a list of the providers for the state of Oregon? Who are the providers? What
yes,
positions and institutions are part of the program?
Yes.
If nothing else, we can be sure that every representative and senator has that list for their district. I mean, if you really, you know, want help, that's one thing we can do. So when constituents call and say, we ain't got none, we could say, let us direct you here.
Madam Chair, we can offer a couple of different things. We definitely can produce that list for you, and we'd be happy to do that. It's also available at www.triwest.com. In the upper right corner, if you click on Find a Provider and walk through the Oregon, you can actually put in different localities and have that list produce. You can print out for a different one town or one zip code or whatever you'd like. It definitely is the case that we would love to have the beneficiaries aware of who the doctors are that are in their areas, and your fellow representatives have that information. I would also offer to you in this area one value add that legislators could bring to this. The TRICARE program is a government program. It is not a top dollar, high level money maker for basically anybody that's involved in it. Those doctors who have signed up to provide care are participating in the nation's expression of gratitude to its service members. And I would not recommend necessarily, but I think I know that in other states, elected leaders have found out who those providers are and sent them letters to thank them for doing their part and taking care of our service members. I will candidly tell you that helps us.
Sure.
Because we need to get more doctors signed up.
Well, we meet with great number of those doctors, and I wouldn't know unless I ask, are you a member?
Right.
I would have no clue.
So we will get you that list, and if you can join us in your communities in expressing appreciation to them, that would be great.
Sure. Representative Park.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have a question regarding the TRICARE Pharmacy Program. I was just reading through this, and I noticed that there are specific pharmacies, TRICARE pharmacies, and if there is not a TRICARE pharmacy within the area of service, then they can access the TRICARE mail order pharmacy. What is the general turnaround time for a mail order?
I don't know the answer to that, and I don't want to give you the wrong answer.
10 days, this veteran tells us behind you.
I believe that they are pretty darn efficient in getting it out. I've been told that by a number of folks, but I don't know the number of days.
And Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, there has been a transition occur in that program, and they, as transitions sometimes do, there have been some handoff hiccups that have gone with that, and there have been some issues. But I will tell you, we do not handle the prescription program. We used to do that, and it was in this new format taken away from us, stripped away from someone. But it is a great benefit. It is a wonderful program. Especially if you do the 90 days mail order in advance, I believe it's $9.
$9
for 90 days worth of medication.
Follow up.
Yes.
That sounds great for somebody that's taking medication on a regular basis, but what about someone that needs antibiotics and it's an emergency situation? Then are there... is there a possibility that they can go to a pharmacy in their area and then that pharmacist can be reimbursed?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, exactly. Just as we have network doctors in communities throughout the state, there are network pharmacies that are signed up and part of the program. In that latter instance, then you need to go get something for the child's earache. Exactly, and it may be two or three of the, the Rite Aid, Walgreens, whatever down the street. But in the former instance, with that, the larger block in that program is the retiree group, and they do it in that fashion, and it really is a wonderful benefit.
If you'd let us know who those pharmacies are, we can also give you some help. We'd be glad to. I want to just understand one last thing, and then we'll see if there are any last questions before we go back to Burns. About these retired individual veterans, a 20-year veteran, if one would have a heart attack, not near a provider, have to have heart surgery, would you pay for it?
You're one of those people.
Madam Chair, emergency care can be handled anywhere, and TRICARE will reimburse. I may be a little bit on thin ice when I say that a heart surgery would be covered in an emergency, but I believe as long as the primary care manager said that was an emergency operation, and yes, they were out of location, that wasn't covered, I believe that it would be fully covered because of emergency care is covered by TRICARE.
I did have that happen Saturday, or learned about it, $18,000 cost to the veteran and his wife. Very, this very example, and I was shocked. And they said, this was our understanding and forever, and then it happened, and that was a lot of money. Okay, back to Burns.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think before I'm actually going to shift from Burns to Portland, but before I say that,
now we're going to really be confused.
That could be easy, though. But I would say in this 29 years in the military, while there are communications challenges, I would still characterize there are many people in the Department of Defense like to throw people to the wolves. They're not from the Department of Defense. TriWest and TRICARE is in fact improving radically and quickly to the betterment of the veterans. And I would say probably because they have restructured to three major contractors like TriWest, and they're making progress rapidly. But we're in the largest mobilization since World War II, so this is frankly all new ground for everybody. I think that, like you asked the question in the maintenance committee, Madam Chairman, I think my key question relates back to either whether it's Burns or whether, and you can write this down because I'd like you to follow up, the 39th Support Battalion of the Marine Corps Reserve is being mobilized. Its mobilization order, I think, is up now, and it's going for a second rotation to Iraq. And there's another prime example, because my concern is you can't communicate with somebody you don't know. And when does TriWest find out who is going, and when do they find out who is going? Because you guys cannot act until you know it. Now, in many cases, you probably don't even know, but, and I'll beat up the Marine Corps Reserve for once. Marine Corps Reserve may, in fact, know, 2 months or 3 months in advance they're really going to go, but the mob order doesn't get cut. It's not an acronym. Mob order doesn't get cut or issued until, so many days beforehand. And then I'm assuming there is some mechanism that they eventually tell TRICARE and TRICARE tells TriWest this unit's going somewhere. And so I'm still concerned about when they get notified, when you know about it, because the family support coordinator, who is a volunteer, can't convey the information about TRICARE or TriWest if they don't know about it. And likewise, which I think this is going back to, again, I think to the county veteran service officer, eventually is going to inherit this thing. They don't know when the unit's being mobilized. And so I don't need an answer now, but I think the crux of the issue is about you can't communicate and fix a problem you don't know it exists, and you don't know it exists until somebody like TriWest is told, hey, the unit in Burns is going, or as we know from the newspaper, and they may not know, that the 39th Support Battalion of the Marine Corps Reserve is going back to Iraq.
And that's from Portland.
So there's my concern.
And do we know when?
I only know from the newspaper.
Yeah.
Madam Chair and Representative Boquist, I'd love to tell you that, yes, we get notified by the Department of Defense, but that, in fact, is not the case. We typically will get a request for a mobilization brief by a family support person to our beneficiary education rep, and that is about the only contact we get. The beneficiary counseling and assistant coordinator at Madigan, or actually Fort Lewis, did a sample of Guard and Reserve orders in her area, and the average notification prior to actual mobilization was 17 days. Now, that is from a period of time before the delayed effective date orders became an approved benefit. So we are really hoping that, indeed, Department of Defense can move that date to the left so that people are notified with to be able to take advantage of that 90 days of benefit. And I believe because of the different initiatives back in Washington that Scott alluded to, that they are going to be pushing that time frame further and further to the left so that they get that full advantage. But unfortunately, we do not get notified, and no, we don't read every paper in the U.S. to find out when and where people are being mobilized from. It really does require a call and a request for a briefing for us to be able to mobilize our folks to get to those various units in as timely a fashion as possible.
Madam Chair, a follow-up just for the committee. I have a question. One of the things that is going to come forward that we have a bill and legislative draft for is to address the county's veteran service officers in training. And I mean, here's a prime example where if we had in place the funding for the county veteran service officers and the training program and included Tri-West, all 36 counties and all 36 offices of veteran services would know that if a unit gets mobilized, there's this whole right. chunk here. And so when you're sitting in Burns and you're in the county seat and the local unit yeah. is going to get mobilized, and you know, because you're being involved in this, you know the fact to pick up the phone and call Tri-West and say, we understand alert. That the 116 cab, B troop of the 116 cab, that is going to get mobilized 90 to 120 days from now, and we want to work with you to schedule to have a briefing to them and their family members in a timely manner, not after the fact. And that would help Tri-West in accomplishing its mission from the government, and it would serve our veterans and those that are serving the country.
Well, we certainly agree with that, and we appreciate so much your time today. I want to just say you're two of the nicest men that I've heard testify in my years of being here, and have taken on a lot of questions and have done so hospitably, and I appreciate it. So I'm sure the veterans are bound to appreciate that same hospitality and respect. And we look forward to meeting with you again, and we'll conclude this invited testimony at this time with our thank yous.
Thank you.
And we'll ask our administrator to please speak to the materials that he has given you.
Madam Chair, in the past meetings, you have asked for a lot of information, just like you asked for information today. We have some of the information that's come in from past meetings, and I just wanted to let those who've given it be acknowledged that we have it. From Gerald Lorang, we have a piece that describes the definition of veteran. I think that Representative Boquist might be particularly interested in that. We have from Representative Hooley's office a discussion of Veterans Administration funding from fiscal year 2001 through 2005, and I believe in the news there's been information on the 2006 proposal. From James Tuksmith, you have a package of, it looks like 10 things with a clip on it that comes from his office. He was the director of the Portland Veterans Hospital.
May I just show this to these men? We're talking about this book. Are you in this book? Are you aware of it?
Yeah.
I'm talking about
we're aware of it, but it's a VA.
The last two items, one's from the Department of Corrections talking about incarcerated veterans, and the last one has to do with eligibility for home loans from your Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Madam, I'd like to testify in dealing with the dental program.
Yes, sir. Could you please come in? come up, and we'll ask Joe to give you his seat for a minute. Please and identify yourself.
Madam Chairman, my name is Mac McDonald. I represent five veterans organizations. 6 months ago, I had a Marine come to me about the dental program. He's in TRICARE. He's a retired U.S. Marine. And he was having his dental work done by a local doctor here in Salem. Subsequently, the doctor had dropped TRICARE because he had to wait 6 months to get his payment for his services. The Marine said he went and looked for other dentists who were providers here in the Salem area and claimed there are none. So I think one of our major problems is finding providers. If we can't find one in the city of Salem that's this size, what are we going to have in Burns? So I think, and they may be able to answer the question, but we need to have a list of providers, dental providers, and have somebody go out and see if we can find some more dental providers. Because this Marine at this present time is paying his own dental cost.
We appreciate this input. Do you like to address it, Mr. Seeley?
Madam Chair, as we mentioned earlier, and is it Mr. McDonald?
Yes.
Noted, we do not do the dental coverage, but we do know the people that do. So we'd be happy to contact them. And we'd like us to provide you a list of the dental providers.
That would be excellent.
Okay.
And also, I would just like us to follow up on the expediency with which the Department of Defense pays the providers. I mean, there apparently is a problem here in the state of Oregon. So some of the resistance goes beyond dentists. It's medical doctors, it's facilities. So maybe we could get some information about the payment policy of the DOD to providers would certainly help us.
Madam Chairman, that is actually our responsibility. That's one of the things that we do for the Defense Department, and I can confirm that there have been some difficulties. We were aware in the past that there were. As of June, the handoff occurred, and the databases, Representative Boquist talked about the DEERS database. It's actually a pillar of technology integrity compared to some of the other databases that we deal with, and we've getting that handoff straight and getting those numbers all in and all the rest of it around the doctors has been a challenge for us.
What is the payment policy?
Well, it is
30 days of complete invoice,
yes.
Or what?
At present, we are in excess of 90% of claims being paid within 30 days. We actually are in a period right now where we're trying to move, and the government's actually encouraging us to move to electronic payment, where the claim gets filed electronically by the doctor's office. We pay it electronically. In those instances where we have that relationship, we are able to do it within 7 days.
Great.
Which is a quick turnaround, but we're not there yet. A majority of doctors are not there yet, and paper claims take a longer time. And I will say again, I will very candidly, this is an area we've had some difficulty with. We need to do better at it. We are in an early stage here, and we believe that as time goes on, we will do better. I don't believe that we will do better. We will do better as
Thank
we go forward
you.
In that,
that
area.
Commitment. We appreciate it.
Okay.
This time I'd like to call on Herb Collum to come forward with testimony, please.
Madam Chair, for the record, Herb Collum, and just as a not as your facility manager. This is just as an old veteran. I was listening to some of the testimony downstairs and just wanted to offer this. I will be eligible for TRICARE for life at age 65, and so I was calling around to some of the providers in the area trying to find out if they accept the TRICARE for life, and many, many, many do not. It is very, very difficult to find a provider so that you can continue with the same providers you have now and have the history to go along with that. It's a real searching effort. It's not a commonly provided service, and just wanted to pass that along.
Well, we appreciate it so much, and Herb, we want to thank you for not only what all you do here in all our facilities, but we want to thank you for serving our country.
Thank you, ma'am.
And we're grateful. Do you want to address this, Mr. Seeley or Mr. Nortz, very briefly?
Sure. It is, as I mentioned, we have engaged a significant number, approaching 6,000 statewide. In the Salem area, I do have the numbers here, actually, pretty close at hand. In the Salem area, we have 700 doctors that are under contract with our network.
We'd like to provide that to Herb.
Yeah, we can break that out specifically. But we are never done with that process. I mean, there are doctors that are going out of the program, doctors that are coming in constantly.
Do they sign a contract?
Yes.
A year or more?
Actually, it is until termination.
Okay.
Is what we do. We just sign them up, and unless the circumstances change, they continue with that relationship. It is helpful to us to know who the doctors are that people like to go see, so we can go talk to them and find out why they're not in. There are
good
cases.
You probably opened the door for many, many veterans, you know, regular doctors to be included. And when they know that, you know, when they realize that the veterans of this state can change any vote,
right.
I think they ought to pay attention.
I'm sure that's the case, Madam Chair. I do believe that your providers care as much as the rest of us do, and they're happy to provide care on that basis if they can make it work financially. And it is they've got to balance their list of patients out to make that work between Medicare and other government programs.
Is the payment higher than Medicare? I didn't want to get in the payment.
It is essentially
as low
the same.
As Medicaid?
It is tied to Medicare.
Okay.
97% of the codes that they use are identical to Medicare. There are two or three. There are differences between the TRICARE program is very big in the obstetrics area, which the Medicare program does not tend to be.
That's true. Okay, Herb, thank you so much, and thank you again, Mr. Seeley. And we have one more individual, Mr. Sullivan. You come forward.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and representatives. My name is Mike Sullivan. I am a lobbyist for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. I'm not going to fall into this acronym thing, I hope.
Okay.
But I've come to make a comment. I was at the general government meeting last Friday for the Senate, and I know I've talked to you, Madam Chairman, about the idea of mandatory funding for the federal VA medical benefits, and considering what we're hearing in the news on the federal budget, I think it's something I would hope you would consider to join in the Senate with a joint memorial on the idea of giving direction to our senators and congresspeople to put that on the table. I think, seriously, in my own personal opinion, that every time there's a defense spending bill, there should be a rider on appropriating money for VA. I mean, if you run a business, you've got to think of stop loss and all the other kind of things. And looking at the report from Darlene Hooley's office that you got today, it was cut $910 million from the discretionary spending of 2005, and yet the total veterans have grown since 1999 by 76.9%. So it's pretty hard to do any kind of business when you don't know your own budget from year to year, and this has been going on since the VA has ever been. So I beseech you all to really consider that. And just for the record, I talked to Gary George, and he said, by all means, go see Representative Nelson. And that's one of the reasons I'm here.
Well, we appreciate your coming forward. And on behalf of all the veterans, we appreciate it. And I want you to know this, that joint memorial was filed before 5 o'clock last Monday.
Well, very good. Thank you very much. Because the other problem is the older veterans are
now in the works, I should say.
Well,
it dropped its LTO.
They're being put behind because of the concerns for the veterans coming, you know, back from Iraq and Afghanistan. We can't forget our veterans of any war.
That's right.
Thank you.
Well, like I said yesterday, and I think it's in the paper today, you men and women secured our future, and this is the least we can do is do everything we can to secure yours, so, and that of your family, and we appreciate you very much.
Thank you very much.
For coming forward today. If there is no more discussion or further testimony, I want to thank you, members, and have a great weekend, and I'll see you next Tuesday. The meeting is adjourned.